Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Archery's podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, A History of Money and Banking in the United States, the Colonial Era to World War II, is a posthumously published work by economist Murray N. Rothbard, assembled from manuscripts and issued by the Ludwig von Mises Institute in 2002. It is a long-form work of economic history, rather than a conventional textbook survey. Rothbard follows American monetary institutions from colonial paper issues and specie shortages through 19th century banking controversies. The creation of the Federal Reserve, the interwar gold exchange system, and the New Deal period. His organizing framework is Austrian economics, which stresses monetary calculation, the limits of credit expansion, and the disruptive effects of political control over money. The book argues that inflation, privileged banking arrangements, suspensions of redemption, and central bank policy were not incidental defects but recurring sources of instability. Its purpose is both historical and interpretive to reconstruct institutional change, while contesting accounts that portray greater federal monetary management as an uncomplicated advance. Readers should therefore approach it as a rigorously argued, explicitly libertarian revision of United States monetary history. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, Austrian economics provides the book's historical lens. Rothbard does not treat monetary history as a detached sequence of laws, price indexes, and institutional dates. He applies Austrian monetary theory to ask how changes in the money supply, bank credit, and legal privileges alter relative prices, investment decisions, and the distribution of gains and losses. This method gives the book a clear causal orientation. When banks expand credit beyond their reserves or governments issue irredeemable paper, Rothbard sees more than a technical adjustment in the financial system. He sees a transfer of purchasing power to early recipients of new money and a process that can encourage unsustainable activity before the broader consequences merge. The approach also places individual and institutional incentives at the center. Legislators, banks, politically connected interests, and monetary officials are analyzed as actors pursuing objectives within rules that they help shape. That distinguishes the book from histories that explain policy mainly through broad economic aggregates or impersonal necessity. The advantage is a strongly integrated narrative linking policy choices to later crises. The limitation is equally important for readers to recognize Rothbard begins from firm theoretical commitments about sound money, fractional reserve banking, and state intervention. His judgments are not ideologically neutral. The book is most useful when read as a coherent interpretive framework that can be compared with monetarist, Keynesian, and institutional accounts of the same events. Secondly, Colonial Paper Money and the Politics of Monetary Privilege. The colonial period establishes a pattern that Rothbard believes recurs throughout American history. Governments facing fiscal pressure seek monetary device that reduce immediate political costs while shifting costs through depreciation. Colonial currencies varied widely among colonies, and the practical need for a medium of exchange existed alongside shortages of specie. Rothbard nevertheless emphasizes the consequences of government paper issues, legal tender measures, and policies that interfered with contractual payment. His central point is not simply that prices rose after excessive notes were issued. It is that monetary depreciation distorts obligations expressed in nominal terms, rewarding debtors who repay in weaker currency, while imposing losses on creditors and holders of money. The discussion also connects money to public finance, especially wartime finance. Rather than treating inflation as an accidental byproduct of emergencies, Rothbard presents it as a politically attractive way to obtain resources without equally visible taxation. This perspective challenges narratives that depict paper currencies chiefly as pragmatic solutions to a young economy with limited coin. It also introduces his standard of sound money, a monetary unit whose value and redemption conditions are not readily altered by political authorities. The colonial chapters matter because they frame later disputes over banknotes, specie payments, and federal monetary power as extensions of an older conflict between fiscal expediency and dependable monetary claims. Thirdly, 19th century banking panics are linked to legal restrictions and credit expansion for Rothbard. 19th century banking history cannot be reduced to a simple contrast between unregulated chaos and modern regulation. He argues that banks operated under a shifting mix of charters, reserve requirements, note issue rules, branch restrictions, and periodic government support. These arrangements often limited genuine competition while creating special privileges or incentives for credit expansion. When banks suspended specie payments during crises, Rothbard regards the suspension as especially consequential because it allowed institutions to avoid honoring the ordinary redemption discipline that gives bank liabilities. Credibility. He interprets major panics and contractions through the Austrian cycle framework expansion of money and bank credit, can lower interest rates, and support investments that later prove inconsistent with real saving. retrenchment then reveals earlier errors. This argument differs from explanations centered chiefly on seasonal liquidity needs, business confidence, or insufficient central bank intervention. The book also criticizes the national banking system, arguing that its structure tied bank reserves to government debt and concentrated the system around designated reserve centers. In Rothbard's account, the resulting fragility was not evidence that markets had failed unaided. It reflected a banking order shaped repeatedly by legislation and fiscal priorities. Whether or not readers accept every causal claim, the analysis makes institutional detail essential. It asks who received privileges, what redemption promises meant in practice, and how legal rules changed the incentives facing banks and their customers. Fourthly, the Federal Reserve is presented as a political and institutional turning point. The creation of the Federal Reserve in 1913 is one of the book's major turning points. Rothbard rejects the view that the institution emerged simply as a neutral technical solution to recurring panics. Instead, he examines the political coalition behind reform and argues that leading banking and financial interests sought a more coordinated system capable of managing reserves and supporting credit expansion. This interpretation emphasizes the difference between competition among banks and centralized coordination under public authority. In Rothbard's framework, a central bank can reduce the immediate pressure on individual banks to maintain conservative reserves, thereby making system-wide inflation more feasible. The Federal Reserve is consequently not merely a lender of last resort in his narrative. It is an institution that changes the scale, organization, and political protection of monetary expansion. The book also connects the First World War era to monetary disruption. Since wartime finance intensified the incentives for governments and banking systems to weaken monetary constraints, readers should distinguish Rothbard's historical evidence from his broader normative conclusion. His account offers a challenge to standard celebratory histories of the Fed, but it does not represent a consensus among economic historians. Its enduring value lies in forcing attention to the design of central bank power. The interests involved in institutional reform and the possibility that policies intended to stabilize finance can also socialize and enlarge financial risk. Lastly, the interwar gold exchange system and New Deal mark the breakdown of sound money. Rothbard treats the interwar period as crucial evidence against the claim that the gold standard itself caused the Great Depression. His focus is the gold exchange system that developed after the First World War, in which central banks held foreign exchange reserves alongside gold and managed currencies through coordinated policy. He argues that this arrangement was not the classical gold standard often credited with imposing firm limits on monetary expansion. In his view, it permitted a more inflationary and politically managed international system. The book gives particular attention to the relationship between the Federal Reserve and international monetary conditions, arguing that efforts to support Britain after its return to gold at its pre-war parity contributed to an unsound American credit expansion during the 1920s. From the premise, Rothbard interprets the subsequent collapse as a correction made worse by interventions that delayed adjustment and reshaped the economy. His New Deal analysis extends the same argument: banking reforms, monetary changes, and regulatory expansion are assessed not only as emergency responses, but as lasting enlargements of state authority. This is a distinctly revisionist reading of the Depression. Many historians assign greater weight to deflation, collapsing demand, bank failures, and policy errors of a different kind. Rothbard stands out by tying the era to earlier monetary privileges and by distinguishing a commodity-based monetary discipline from the managed gold exchange arrangements that he believes had already undermined it. In conclusion, this book is best suited to readers who want a demanding, thesis-driven account of United States monetary history rather than a neutral introductory overview. Students of economic history, central banking, the Federal Reserve, the gold standard, and libertarian political economy will find a large body of connected argument and institutional detail. It can also benefit policy readers who want to understand why debates over inflation, lender of last resort powers, bank rescues, and monetary discretion often rest on incompatible theories of how credit cycles begin. Its practical value is chiefly analytical. Rothbard encourages readers to ask who gains from new money, how redemption commitments are enforced or suspended, and whether a reform changes incentives rather than merely changing administrative structure. Those questions remain useful even for readers who reject his conclusions. What distinguishes the book from many general histories is its consistent Austrian framework and its refusal to treat the expansion of federal monetary authority as the natural endpoint of financial development. It joins colonial finance, 19th century bank regulation, the Federal Reserve, international monetary arrangements, and the New Deal into one interpretive story about the erosion of monetary constraint. That coherence is a major strength, though it also means the work should be read alongside scholarship representing competing perspectives. Rothbard offers forceful analysis, extensive historical ambition, and a clear normative position, making the book especially valuable as a serious counterpoint to mainstream accounts of American money and banking. If you would like to support Murray N. Rothbard, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.